Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The day I started to stop being a feminist was the day I saw, you know, the positive pregnancy test.
Now in the 21st century, if you want terrorism, you go to Islam. That's where you find it.
Sexuality and the practice of sexual intercourse implies commitment and fidelity.
We don't preach the gospel to people to make them comfortable with sin. We preach it to comfort them when they sin.
Radio operators, commercial and amateur alike, just love Issues, etc.
It was a busy year, 2018, in biblical archaeology. The biblical archaeology's top 10 discoveries of 2018 are interesting in themselves. The number one, of course, was one we recently discussed here on Issues, etc. That is the discovery of a signet ring allegedly belonging to Pontius Pilate of Jesus' trial fame there in the New Testament. But there are many other discoveries, some of which I didn't even know about. We'll be discussing them here in the first half hour of Issues, etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Friday afternoon, the 4th of January. Dr. Craig Evans will join us for that conversation. Carol Tobias joins us after that, president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. We'll talk with her about federal pro-life legislation in 2019. It's already been kicked off by some legislation from the newly democratically controlled House that would gut the Mexico City policy and make funding for abortion be, well, part of what the United States exports in terms of its funding to other countries. Then we will turn to the Lutheran Confession series. Today we'll be in Luther's Small Catechism, the second petition of the Lord's Prayer, Thy Kingdom Come, with Pastor Paul McCain. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues, Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about biblical archaeology's top discoveries in 2018, Dr. Craig Evans. He's Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, and author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
Do you agree with the ranking, at least, of the first, the top story of biblical archaeology being that signet ring of Pilate's?
Yeah, I do. I do, because we only have one other artifact relating to Governor Pilate, and that's the well-known Pilate stone that was found in 1961 at Caesarea Maritima. What this ring tells us, we of course know that Pilate was a real person. We have texts that relate to him inside the New Testament and outside. But the idea that he would have a ring that would belong to someone else, someone who worked for him in a different location, that's very informative. That tells us something and gives us something to think about how his administration may have taken place. So he had some kind of a lieutenant, some kind of a high-ranking administrator who had a seal ring that he would press against clay or wax, and that would reverse it. And then when you look at the seal, it would say, of Pilate, belonging to Pilate, or having Pilate's authority. So I think that's important.
We should probably qualify this conversation at the outset by saying that these discoveries aren't necessarily made in 2018, but the findings were, or certain facts about them were, published in 2018. Archaeology is a pretty slow business, isn't it?
Yes, you're quite right. As we discussed in the program some weeks ago, the ring was among several items, thousands of items, unearthed in 1968. And so that was part of the story, too. And here it is, 50 years after its find, it's recognized. And of course, in the Christianity Today online list of the top 10 discoveries, it notes that it was very badly corroded, it was dirty, it was hard to read, and it was only after it was carefully cleaned only recently that we were able to read that it in fact says of Pilot.
Is this kind of the, no pun intended, the dirty little secret of archaeology, that thousands and thousands of artifacts, some of them entirely mundane, are routinely unearthed, and the task is largely sifting through the stuff?
Yes, you're quite right. Literally sifting it at the site, and then sifting it again, you might say, and sorting through all of the artifacts that have been taken out of the ground. And this kind of thing, you know, the actual structure of a building that's still in the ground, that's obvious. We see that, and we know, oh, here are the walls. This is the footprint of the building. Here are mosaics on the floor. Things like that are real obvious. But when you take bucket after bucket, tens of thousands of buckets of debris out of the ground, and not all of it is sifted, but lots and lots of things, thousands of pieces of pottery, pieces of iron, jewelry, coins, etc., are found and placed in storage units and so on, bagged and tagged. That's just a gigantic task. So it is, in a way, the proverbial needle in a haystack. When we've taken several haystacks out of a site, we have to sift through all that. That's why it can take a long time before actually finding something and recognizing what it is.
Another one, which is number two from Christianity Today, the statue head of a biblical king from Abel Beth Maacah. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, it's anytime we find anything connected to Israel where it's an image of a face or a figure, that's significant. Now, it could be a god or a goddess or something like that. It could be, in this case, a foreign king. We're not really sure. But anytime we get a little sculpture, it's very tiny, by the way. It's all of 2 inches. But it's potentially very significant because they're relatively rare. And so that's important. I don't know if I would have ranked it number two. I think I would have been more inclined to, you know, take the Isaiah seal and rank it right there next to the Pilot ring.
Speaking of that Isaiah seal, what was that discovery?
Well, you know, that was just amazing. And what's neat about that, it's like a 1-2 punch. It is found at what would have been the palace ruins of King David in Jerusalem, and it was found quite literally 1 meter or so away from the spot where a few years earlier King Hezekiah's seal was found. 17 times Isaiah and Hezekiah are together in the same passage of Scripture in the Bible. They were contemporaries. Isaiah confronted Hezekiah, confronted his father Ahaz as well. Isaiah was a major prophetic figure. His book in the Bible is the longest of all the prophetic books in the Bible. He was a very influential person. And to find his seal ring, the fact that he's a prophet and has a seal ring is interesting in itself. And to find that just a meter away from where they found King Hezekiah's royal seal, that's pretty impressive. So that, for me, that's a very important find.
How would that artifact have been used?
Well, it probably for official communications. That's usually how we find the seals. They're used, they press against the wax or clay that seals a scroll. That's how the books were all made then. Or straps that would go around it. And then there was, so the seal was pressed so you could tell that it had not been opened up, and therefore it could not have been tampered with. And then what happens is there's a fire, there's a fiery destruction, and these clay seals are baked, and they become ceramic, and that they then survive. They don't melt, they don't dissolve, they don't get distorted from the passage of time and moisture, and so they last, and we find these seals. So it tells us right away that Isaiah wrote things, letters, he sealed things, possibly even some of his prophetic oracles that we now have in his book, the book we call Isaiah. So finding seals is very important. We have found hundreds and hundreds of seals, 30 or 40 individuals, that many of them we know from the Old Testament itself, officials and so on. We have them named now. So the seals are really important as an archaeological find in their own right.
The number four is another one of these, and this is a seal that simply reads governor of the city, but its location is pretty significant, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, the comment that's made is it functions more or less like a like being the mayor of a city. We didn't know that. This is a new factoid that we need to think about in terms of the city governance and administration. And it was right there in Jerusalem, found between a couple of stones in a wall. So it's remarkable the things that can be found and how you find them. And I think that's one of the things that impresses me about the 2018 list of the top 10 is that we just learned some new things. I don't think we knew that a prophet had a seal before. We didn't know that Pilate might have had an administrator with his authority to make seals. We didn't know that. And now we have the idea that perhaps there was something like a mayor of the city. That's a new thing, and on it goes. So 2018 was a remarkable year in archaeology.
Another one of the things that was discovered was a bekawate from the Temple Mound. What is a bekawate?
Well, there were scales for measuring things in antiquity, and so we're not real sure what beka or beka means on it, but it was used to weigh perhaps the temple tax, you know, to determine and provide a receipt on the basis of one's paying of tax or maybe giving a gift. In any case, it was important to have a receipt, and it was important to know what the true weight was. We're used to modern coins. Nobody weighs our nickels and dimes. Nobody weighs our cash. But in antiquity, when one paid with precious metal, it was often weighed to make sure that the proper weight was presented.
This one has at least a note on it in the Christianity Today article about a process used by archaeologists to recover artifacts called wet sifting. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. And in fact, they're doing wet sifting at a number of sites now. It's relatively new. Herschel Shanks, longtime editor of Biblical Archaeology Review, was a strong advocate of it, and for good reason, because what I was just saying earlier, when we dig things up, you might have a coin, you might have a seal, you might have who knows what's in the debris, and it's part of a dirt clod or something, and you don't even know it, and you throw it into a bucket, and it even gets past the sifter. But wet sifting removes the clinging soil, removes the debris, and you can see what the item is. Is it just a small pebble, or is it a cartouche? Is it a, you know, is it a seal? Is it a ring? Is it a coin? And wet sifting makes that happen, and at Shiloh, and Shiloh made one of our top 10 discoveries as well. At Shiloh, they've set up a whole station. Scott Stripling, the head archaeologist there, he's a good friend, and they're finding things right and left because of wet sifting. And sometimes they'll actually go to a place, an archaeological dig from years ago, and they'll actually go to the debris that's been thrown out on the side of the hill, and they'll systematically wet sift through all of that debris, and then what do you know, they find things that had been overlooked.
Is it like panning for gold? I'm trying to picture how it works.
It's a little bit like panning for gold, but there's no stream exactly. There's a fine screen instead and pressure washing. And so you're squirting it. It's spraying. I think what I picture is you're inside a kitchen at a restaurant. You're doing the dishes real fast. and that's what they're doing. They actually have a station with the roof over it and plumbing above their heads, nozzles, and they spray this stuff. And so it's a little bit like panning for gold. But the idea is to spray away the dirt and the debris and see what you're actually looking at. Of course, the vast majority of it is just debris. It's just pebbles and stones, little pieces of broken pottery. But once in a while, there is a special seal or something like that just got overlooked because it looks like a piece of dirt.
We're talking with Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence, about biblical archaeology's top discoveries of 2018. When we come back from this break, we will talk about a Canaanite tomb that was discovered unlooted. Thank you for helping us make Budget and for more than 5 million downloads of Issues Etc. in 2018. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 11 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support of Issues Etc. live and on demand, and for our 24/7 talk and music stations.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star,
listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about biblical archaeology's top discoveries of 2018. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. Dr. Evans, one of the more fascinating, right there in the middle of the pack, is an unlooted royal tomb, a Canaanite tomb, I believe, extremely ancient. I think it dates back almost to the patriarchs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're quite right, and this is amazing to me because tombs this accessible usually have been looted, and somehow this one escaped detection. The Megiddo is a place where excavations have been going on for decades, on again, off again. In Israel, it was a fortress town. There's a tell that is a man-made hill, as it were, fortress and city on top of city over the centuries, and in 2016, the excavation got underway, and there was an important discovery, but only this past year, the tomb was found and opened, and it was discovered to be about 3,700 years old, which takes us back to when it would be, the sons of Jacob, approximately in that time, maybe just a little bit later. So it is patriarchal in age. And in this undisturbed tomb were the remains of a man, a woman, a child, all adorned with gold and silver jewelry. And of course, that would have all been gone had looters found that tomb. And so this is really important to us. But one of the most astonishing discoveries, this may seem trivial, but this is the kind of information we love to acquire. There was a jug in the tomb, and grave goods are very common in tombs like this. So you'll have plates, jugs, instruments of one sort or another. Well, there was a jug that actually had vanilla in it. and we didn't know that that spice was available in the Middle East that far back in time. So it's just an amazing discovery. It shows you people did travel, and so the spice trade was rather active even back then, and almost all the way back to the time of Abraham and Isaac.
How common is it to find intact artifacts from that far back? I mean, we are talking about approaching the time of Abraham.
Yeah, I know. We do. Of course, there have been tombs recently. Another tomb or two in Egypt have been found as well that have not been looted in the past. So we do. But, you know, there are thousands of tombs, and so there's lots of opportunities. But there's so many of them are looted, and the reason that they're looted is not hard to find, because especially royal tombs could have, in today's dollars, would be the equivalent of millions of dollars worth of gold, silver, and jewels. And so that would just be so tempting for people in antiquity. And so tomb after tomb that we find, there's a robber's hole. They've tunneled their way through it somehow, right through stone. And they're highly motivated because they know what they'll find. If they get into that tomb and they're first ones in, they're going to go away with riches.
How do you think this one goes on, both undiscovered and unlooted, for almost 4,000 years?
It just wasn't detected, and that's what will happen. And sometimes the ancients are very careful to disguise the location. That was always the problem, you know, because you wanted a monument. The monument, of course, the word monument means memorial. You want people to say, oh, yes, that's where King so-and-so is buried. The trouble is the monument also is like a beacon. It's just inviting people to say, look, break into this, dig underneath this, and you might find treasure. Sometimes the monument disappears, the marker is gone, and then nobody knows that anybody's even buried there. And I think that's what happened here at Megiddo.
Moving to Egypt, what is this artifact that was listed among these finds in 2018 at number 7?
Well, these things are called ABCDaries, and of course you can tell we're just saying A, B, C, D. What they are is a practice sheet where a student is instructed. It can be a wax tablet, it can be a piece of paper, it can be a lot of things. We would probably use chalkboards today, or electronic ones anyway, where a student practices the alphabet, A, B, C, D, or in this case, the Egyptian alphabet, and Greek, Hebrew, and so on. That's what kids did in the ancient times, or people training to become scribes. And so ABCDaries are important because they indicate to us how far back literacy goes. It sometimes indicates to us the skill of literacy, scribal talent and ability. We gain insights into education for the young and that sort of thing. So this is a significant discovery. It dates back to the 15th century BC. So this one goes way back too.
And while it is in Egyptian, it is in a Semitic alphabet or some early form of the Semitic alphabet. Why is that significant?
Well, it gives us an idea then that, the Hebrew could be written down, a real early form of Paleo-Hebrew. That's an issue that comes up all the time with the so-called minimalists who say, well, there was nobody around that could write these stories. And they're usually talking about King David and King Solomon. There's nobody in the 10th century B.C. in Israel that can write down the stories. Well, if you've got a 15th century B.C., ABCDary that's Semitic, it could suggest that, well, Hebrew is being written down also. And if it goes back that far, we're talking Moses. And so I think it's a challenge then for the minimalists who say, well, even if there really was a Moses back then, was he in any position to write anything down? There wouldn't have been any literacy back then. And I think that's just plain wrong. I think that's an unwarranted skepticism. And an archaeological discovery like this shows the skepticism to be without foundation.
Sometimes the news intersects with a geopolitics, and that's the case for the number 8 one, which has with the note in Christianity Today starts with ISIS blowing up the shrine of the tomb of the prophet Jonah at Esarhaddon. Is that what it is?
Well, yeah, Esarhaddon was Assyrian king, and he was at war with Judah, the southern kingdom that had survived. Assyria had already destroyed the northern kingdom. Remember the famous story, Sennacherib, who invaded the south and surrounded Jerusalem and had Hezekiah and the people of Jerusalem terrorized, holed up in the city of Jerusalem. And it was Isaiah who assured him that it would be all over for Sennacherib. Well, anyway, Esarhaddon is one of those kings of this period of time. And one of the, I'm reluctant to say one of the positive features of ISIS vandalism and destruction is that some things have been brought to light. Some things have been discovered. Ancient artifacts we didn't even know about have been found. Old books have been found, smuggled out of the country. But, of course, it's at a terrible price because of these acts of destruction. But it looks like we have some inscriptions now that have come to light, which means that they could have direct bearing on the period of the 7th century when Esarhaddon reigned, about 681 to 669. He was the successor to Sennacherib. All of this is B.C., of course. So we'll probably learn a little more about his reign and a little more about the politics of the time and possibly learn a little more about the southern kingdom of Judah itself.
You had mentioned earlier Shiloh and, in this case, a clay pomegranate. Why is that important?
Well, the clay pomegranate is a very important symbol for Israel. And the Shiloh, some of our listeners might not remember this, but that's where the house of God was. That was where the Ark of the Covenant was before David had it relocated to Jerusalem. And that was the prelude to the building of the temple by Solomon at Jerusalem. And so the Ark of the Covenant was very important, and we want to know where it was. And the reason the clay pomegranate is important is the pomegranate was worn by the priests. Now, we don't know if this one was worn by a priest. It's possible. But it's part of the symbolism that the high priest used. We actually found in Jerusalem a gold bell shaped like a pomegranate, which would be part of the requirement that the priest wore on his robes. That's Exodus 28:33. So a gold pomegranate from the time of Herod's temple was found in Jerusalem. Well, this one goes all the way back before the first temple was built. So we've just leapt back in time from the time of Herod. We've gone back 1,000 years, back to the time of King Saul, and where the house of God in the days of Samuel, the high priest, would have been at Shiloh. So this is a huge find, and I'm really glad that the excavations at Shiloh have been restarted in the last couple of years by Scott Stripling and his team.
And then finally, an inscription on an ancient column for the name Jerusalem. What would you tell us about it?
Well, you know, isn't it interesting? You think, well, this is the city, Jerusalem. It's a very ancient city, well-established, long-existing, even before King David conquered the city around 1,000, not quite 1,000, but about around 1,000 B.C. And yet we have very few inscriptions that are early with the name Jerusalem. And this one dates, it's on a pillar, piece of a pillar, dates to about 100 B.C. The spelling is interesting, too, Yerushalayim. This very full spelling. And so this was an important find. It's an important word, obviously, and it is surprisingly relatively rare. So I'm not at all surprised that finding the name Jerusalem written on a column ranks in the top 10 for the year.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. When you purchase Jesus and His World using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence by Dr. Craig Evans. Dr. Evans, thank you.
You're very welcome.
When we come back from the break, Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, is going to join us. We're going to talk about federal pro-life legislation in 2019 with the Democratic Party in charge of the House of Representatives, at the very least. We can expect some changes. Whether or not they'll make it past the Senate of the President is another question. We'll discuss that with Carol after this.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Interested in missions and evangelism? You won't want to miss the January issue of The Lutheran Witness. Learn how the Apostles' Creed informs personal evangelism. Get to know Theodore Nather, the first overseas LCMS missionary. Hear about how one church planter is sharing the gospel in an unreached corner of Albuquerque and discover anew what it truly means to be Lutheran and unashamed. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.